So in the first shiur we talked about the general philosophy of kashrut, if you remember, the reasons for it and the different understandings in the Rishonim and Achronim, the regards to the kashrut. Then second lecture we all talked about all about the philosophy of vegetarianism. What is the Torah's perspective on a person abstaining from meat or chicken for ideological purposes? We came to some interesting conclusions there. The last year before Shavuot was about basar and chalav, meat and milk, dairy and the combinations, and so on and so forth that we discussed last time. So now what we're going to do is move on to Tevilat Kelim. So Tevilat Kelim, one of the topics which it's relatively small but there's a lot of details to it and sometimes some misconceptions, so I think it's worthwhile we go through it and try to understand the basics of Tevilat Kelim. Then we'll discuss some very interesting questions towards the end, some practical questions today which have come up. So the origins of the mitzvah of Tevilat Kelim are in the Torah. This is why this is a mitzvah. One of the 630 mitzvot is mitzvah of Tevilat Kelim. And the context of this mitzvah was the people who returned from war with Midian. This is in the end of the book of the Midbar. So people waged war with Midian, and they came back from the war, and they had some of the spoils. And of course, apart from the jewelry, there were some utensils. And they didn't want to just discard it, so they came to Moshe. Moshe told them that they have to do two things to it. What are the two things to it? Says the Pasuk, if you have a look, for the English here, Elazar HaKohen said to the soldiers returning from the war, this is the rule that Hashem commanded Moshe, as far as the gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, lead are concerned, whatever was used over fire must be made to go through fire and purged, and then purified with nidah water. That, however, which was not used over fire, needs only to be made to go through water. And so, should be enough between one between two. Should be enough. One between two. Yeah. You don't have guys. Okay. This is to ensure that those who do have one, you know, follow attentively. This is why. Yeah. Maybe if we all sit together, then we'll solve the problem. Yeah.
If I need it, I'll ask for it.
And so, Jack, you have? Daniel, just what's up to Jack as well? Yeah. So, this is the source for it. Now, what must be made very clear from looking at this pasuk is there are two different concepts, and unfortunately this is something which people sometimes misunderstand. Torah says, Moshe says, that whatever was used over fire must be made to go through fire, and then purified with nidah water. What that means is there are two separate things going on here. There is one thing called hag'alat kelim. Hag'alat kelim means to kasher kelim. That means anything which is new or old, regardless, the point is if it's been used, if it's absorbed food which is in kosher, if it's absorbed prohibition, then it cannot be used until it's gone through Hag'alah. Hag'alah, we know Hag'alah is from Pesach, from during the year. Hag'alah is done with fire, it's done only done with heat. And Hag'alah only needs to be done normally, with things which have absorbed through heat. That's Hag'alah. But here, even after that, the Torah says, and then purified with nidah water. That means it's something separate. Tevilat kelim has got nothing to do with hag'alat kelim. Don't make the mistake of thinking that if one takes, one buys something from a non-Jew, then he can go and put it in the mikveh, and then it's fine to use. Right? If you're buying something new from a non-Jew, and it hasn't absorbed anything, then yes. And all you have to do is put it in the mikveh. But when you are kashering something, and something has absorbed non-kosher, bliot non-kosher absorptions, then that's not sufficient to do tevilat kelim. Similarly, one cannot rely on hag'alat kelim. If you're buying something from a non-Jew, and it's been used already, and you want to do hagala to it, sometimes you can, you know, be buying secondhand, these big things, caterers sometimes use, and sometimes you have to do hagala to it, so you have to kasher it, they're buying it secondhand, and so that's fine, do a proper hagala to it. But then, that's not sufficient, because you bought it from a non-Jew. From here we learn from this pasuk, that, like the people when they came back from the war, the spoils from the war, which were from the Midianites, they had to go and put it in the mikveh. Similarly, we as well, whenever we buy something from a non-Jew, then it has to go through the mikveh and be toveled. Now, today, normally, most of us, when we're buying things firsthand. We're not buying things which have been used in the past, and that's fine, and therefore, this doesn't apply. Right? Hagala, normally, we associate hagala, we associate kashering with things which are, you know, we've made not kosher, or Pesach stuff, something like that. So today the main thing is talking about tevilat kelim. That's what we're going to be talking about tonight, is tevilat kelim, when something has been bought from a non-Jew specifically, and has to go to the mikveh. And as we've seen, this is a mitzvah from the Torah. This is one of the 630 mitzvot, and it's one which we need to be aware about, and be meticulous about. So, the Gemara says this as well. The Gemara codifies this. Number two, Amrav Nachman said, Rabba Barabua, new utensils which belong to a non-Jew but were never used by him must be immersed in a mikveh. And he brings this pasuk, this verse which we just quoted, he brings as a source. And the Gemara is interpreting this Gemara, don't think this is unique to when you are kashering something, because there is an opinion that only when you kasher something, you do hagalah to it, then you have to tovel it. No, that's not. Nachman's saying it's not the case, is that regardless of whether hagalah has been done to it or not, you still have to tovel. With the Midianites, they had to do hagalah, they had to kasher it first and only then tovel it, because it had been used for non-kosher food, right? But Rabbi Nachman is teaching us that they're not connected one with another, and even when there is no hagalah process, nonetheless, there still has to be a tevilah process in order to make the kli usable. Now, what are the reasons for this? Now, normally when you try to understand the reason for mitzvah, you'll find many, many reasons brought down, whether it's in the Gemara, in the Rishonim, many different reasons are brought down normally. Here, however, very, very difficult to find more than these two reasons. Searched a lot, looked up lots of places, I don't think there are any further reasons than these two. And the first reason isn't even a reason, not a reason we can understand at least. The first reason is the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher. He writes very simple, it's Gezirat HaKatuv. Gezirat HaKatuv means something which the finite mind cannot understand, we can't necessarily understand all of the Torah, and it's something which we lack a sufficiently comprehensive reason for it. That's what the Rosh writes. However, the Yerushalmi, the Gemara Yerushalmi, actually, this is quoted by the Ritva, brings the reason, and to the best of my knowledge, this is the only reason given. The Rambam also brings this reason as well. Water is the source of life, right? Water has the ability to transform lots of things. It gives us nourishment. And of course, we know water is the most potent when it comes to actually changing the status of a human being, right? A human being, people go to the mikveh. In the olden days, men and women were impure, went to the waters and became pure. Nowadays, women as well. But even more than that, you can actually change the whole identity of a human being through water. And of course, we're talking about conversion, right? A person who goes to the mikveh and converts, and goes to the water, that changes his or her whole status and whole identity. And this is huge ramifications. If you think about it, it's not just becoming Jewish. It severs ties with, you know, the biological ties with his or her parents. No longer exists from a halachic perspective. There are huge ramifications. The water is something very powerful. We forget about it. And eating, like we discussed in the first year, eating is something full of holiness, full of spirituality. And when a person eats, he has to make sure he's doing it with the kedusha, with the necessary holiness. And so, just like when the Gemara Yerushalmi compares it, just like when a person converts and goes to the water, similarly, when we're taking something from a non-Jew, we're buying something from a non-Jew, and starting to use it for food purposes, because food is something we ingest, therefore it goes to the mikveh and we purify it, and therefore elevate its use only for holy purposes. This is the only reason. As I said, it's interesting, you know, that we don't, normally there are other reasons, but this seems to be the only reason, and that makes sense, you know, it's the water in order to, because these are, we're going to learn, these only utensils used with food need to go to the mikveh, and therefore, for this reason, it has to go through the same process and be elevated in order for us to use it. We said before the difference between kashering and toveling. If there is ever a case where a person needs to kasher something, like something, he's buying something from a non-Jew and needs to be kashered, he must always be sure to do the kashering and then the toveling. Just like the Pasuk says that when they bought the stuff from the Midianites, when they took the stuff from the Midianites, they first had to kasher it and only then put it in the mikveh. Similarly, the process is always first you do the kashering and only then following that is the tevilah. If you did it the wrong way around, then it has to actually be repeated because there are two elements here. The kashering something is the physical refinement, right? There's non-kosher food absorbed here, so you have to physically expel what's been absorbed in it, that you do with heat, with fire. Even once you've expelled the physical impurity within it, then we expel the spiritual impurity within it, and we elevate it through the mikveh. So these are two mitzvot which are linked to each other, very different. The first, before you can reach the spiritual, first you have to do the physical, and therefore the first thing we do is the kashering, and only then, after that, the toveling.
When you say kashering, do you mean purging with fire?
Purging with fire.
Putting in boiling hot water.
Well, it depends on the kashering entails all of that. It depends on what you're talking about. You know, if it's boiling with hot water, it depends exactly how it became taref. That's always how it goes. Kibor al kach porto, the way it's absorbed, the way it has to be expelled. Sometimes it's going to have to be just boiling, sometimes it has to be more than that. Like actually purging. Now, since this is a mitzvah from the Torah, one has to be stringent and ensure that it's been done, and one cannot even use utensils before they have been toveled. There is even an opinion brought down, but the halakha doesn't follow this, but just to show you the severity, there are opinions which hold that you're not meant to actually keep utensils in your house if they haven't been toveled yet, from the concern that you may come to use them without actually toveling them. Of course, we know that's not the halakha. We buy things and we only take them to the mikveh when we need to take them. But it just shows you the importance. Because it's something from the Torah's perspective, if you're not sure whether it's been done, sometimes you can get one mixed up with others. Right? That can happen sometimes. People ask, then say, yeah. If you get you bought a few, they're very similar, and then one gets mixed up with the others, then, although normally we would say you can rely on the Rov, you can rely on majority. Right? Normally when something happens, you can rely on majority. Because it's easy to be done here, and it's something with the Doraita, something which from the Torah's perspective needs to be done, therefore we would say to do it again without a bracha. But that only applies to utensils which the tevilah, the immersion, needs to be done from a biblical level. Okay, we're going to see there's a difference in type of utensils, which exactly type of utensils need to be toveled. So, if we have a look, number 6. So what types, let's go through all the different types, and again, feel free to ask any questions, any types which I haven't included, which you may want to discuss. So, the Pasuk quoted, we saw, from the Torah's perspective, all types of metals. All metals are mandated, their tevilah, by the Torah. So, aluminium, tin, iron, gold, silver, copper, lead, anything which is reformed, anything which is smeltable, something like that, these are all things which the Torah mandates that a person needs to tovel it. Glass, however, doesn't need to. From the Torah's perspective, glass does not need to be toveled. And the Chachamim said that because it's not one of the metals listed, right? Glass is very different to metal. And ever the Chachamim came along and they said that actually glass as well we will enact because it's similar to metal, has a similar to metal, and the fact that it can be smelted and you can make things with it. And because it's similar in that respect to metals, therefore they made the gezerah to also tovel glass as well. Similarly, pyrex as well, the same thing. Pyrex also, but only midrabanan. Just on the side, just you should know, pyrex as well, for us, Faradim, has the same status as glass. Just like glass doesn't, Just like glass doesn't, exactly the same. Think about it, what's pyrex? It's a type of glass. Just like glass can't become non-kosher.
It is, I was told that you can't do that, it absorbs.
Because the Benish Hai holds the glass, it was machmen like Ashkenazim.
So glass is fine, but pyrex isn't.
Okay, well, we can discuss that afterwards, yeah, but the pyrex is the same, Hamavadiah clearly says, pyrex is the same status as glass, no difference between the two, because they don't absorb, right? But you see the same idea, because it's like glass, and like glass is tevilat kelim is midrabanan, so to pyrex tevilat kelim is midrabanan. Tevilat kelim is midrabanan, but it's actually it's something which doesn't absorb it, so no hagala is necessary to be done to glass. Just to finish off the other two things, plastic and nylon. So plastic, Poskim talk about this at length, Poskim the last 100 years or so. Because plastic is something which can be reformed, if you think about it. Plastic you can melt, you can change, you can make things with it, right? And therefore some say that plastic also, because it's meltable, it's like glass, it should fall under the same gezerah, the same rabbinic enactment with glass, plastic should also fall under it. And that logic is true. But others say, this is what halakha follows, this is what the mass majority of people, you know, Chacham Avodas rules this very clearly, that true, if you just follow logic, then you are right, that plastic has exactly the same states as glass. However, glass is itself a takanat hazal. It's an enactment which Chachamim made. And what they made on, we don't add on to what Chachamim. If they make a gezerah, they make an enactment, and that's fine. You know, we have to keep what they make. But we don't add to it. And therefore, since plastic wasn't around in those times, the gezerah Chachamim made was only on things which are glass, right? That's what they made the gezerah on. Even though plastic, in the sense, is similar to glass in that it can be reformed, nonetheless, that wasn't part of the enactment of the Chachamim. Therefore, plastic does not need tevilah. There are those who will still say, as we said, because the logic of glass extends to plastic as well, therefore they won't. That's fine. Those who want to do it, tavol and bracha, they can turn to plastic. But what must be very careful is that one doesn't make a bracha on it. Because the vast majority, the consensus of the poskim, is that plastic does not need to be toveled. And whenever something doesn't need to be toveled, if you want to be extra meticulous and take it to the mikveh, that's fine. You're more than welcome to do so. But just, you can't make a bracha on it. Because the bracha is when Torah tells you have to do something, and when you don't have to do it, then you can't make a blessing on it. The final category, wood and earthenware, that absolutely does not need to rila. You know, and sometimes you go to the mikveh and you see people tevilin wood, you're just thinking to yourself, you know, where they got this from. But it definitely doesn't need any tevila. Wood, earthenware, ceramics, like porcelain, these types of things. If talking about if it's not coated at all. Okay, that's it's important for me to clarify now. If they are not coated, then they do not need to be toveled. If it's pure wood, pure earthenware, like bone, like ivory, something like that, if it's pure, then it doesn't need to be toveled, because that is not something which is in any way similar to glass, and it's not one of the metals in the Torah, so definitely doesn't need a tevilah. If, however, the inside of it is coated with a metal, then it does need a tevilah, even with the beracha, the final halakha, even with the beracha. If it's only the outer of it, where the food doesn't come into contact with, then that doesn't need tevilah. So in conclusion, you always need to be thinking to yourself, what's coming in contact with the food, what material is that? If it's a metal, like the metals we've listed, then it's something which is, from the Torah's perspective, needs a tevilah. If it's glass or pyrex, then it's only midrabanan perspective. Plastic, we said, doesn't need tevilah. If you want to take the mikveh, fine, it's good, but no blessing should be recited. And finally, earthenware, pure wood, things like that, then they do not need tevilah unless they are coated, something which is, with a metal, then they should be toveled. The question arises, if something is coated with glass, so a wood, another which is coated with glass, and some say that Hachamim weren't, because the idea of having to tovel something which is coated, earthenware, wood which is coated, that's only from a rabbinic level. The question is, does this extend to glass as well? Right? So it's ready, you know, that's getting into the details. But the final halakha is with if something which is coated with glass, someone should try to take it to the mikveh, but doesn't recite a bracha, doesn't recite a blessing over it. So, any questions on that? You have a question for?
Yes. Disposable aluminium
trays. Okay, we'll come to disposable. We're going to talk about disposables. Disposables are coming. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You talk about things which can be sort of melted down, reformed.
Yeah.
If you actually had a vessel and you melted it down and reformed it, would that still be part of it? Would it be bought from a non-Jew? Or it's a new status?
It depends when you bought it from the non-Jew.
You bought it, they used it. Yeah?
So you bought
it down and you make a new keli out of it.
Then there's an eater.
doesn't need anything.
No, because you made it. Now it's been. You're going to see this idea very soon with coffee jar. You've made it. Remind me when we get to number 8. Remind me to discuss that when we get to number 8.
Rabbi, I must have missed this. China. We get pure China. Some
they are glazed normally.
Okay. No,
that's why they need.
And then they're glass glazed, are they? Or they're not metal glazed.
So then you'll tovel. If it's pure China and just glazed,
yeah.
Then tovel that's a bracha. Glass.
Without.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's a doubt whether they need a tevilah bichlal or not. Yeah.
So glass items, you make a bracha, you don't.
Of course, no. Glass, let me get this clear. Glass items, definitely bracha is made on, because Hachamim instituted to toggle glass. So because Hachamim, it's normal, like we make a bracha on any other rabbinic enactment. Hashek, Hashem, Tzvan, Arn, Tatadayim. Ar mitzvat, Ladik, Ner, Chanukah. Right, these are all rabbinic enactments, you make a bracha on it. But here, that when you have something coated, the interior is a metal, and the main thing is actually wood or earthenware, that only needs a tevilah midrabanan. The question is, does that extend to glass, where glass itself is only midrabanan, does that extend also to a case where it's coating something or not? You see? So therefore, with the final halakha, we do tovel it, but that should be done without a bracha.
We don't know just that it's even glass. I mean, the coatings, the science of what they use nowadays, don't know it's glass.
Yeah, but
it's glazed. They put glaze on. I don't know if it's glass. I don't know if it's some other glaze.
What do they normally glaze it with?
Well,
it's
glazed contains silica. That's how you make glass out of. So it's got some properties of glass.
Like enamel.
What's the chemical from
there? Same thing.
Yeah. We'd have to substitute the tovel with something else, really. The metal dish or something like that to make sure, if you're in doubt about it. But you're asking all today, all the glazed china, really, what they say it's.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to think about what exactly. I have to really research what exactly the, you know. Daniel, any ideas? Glazed?
Silica, metal oxide, and aluminum. Make
things
silica, that's what we make glass out of. So it has got
an element of it, but the rest of it. Okay, fine. Moving on to number seven. So this is always the important point to remember. What actually needs tevilah? What types of food? Because not anything which contains food needs to be toveled always. Okay? So we have to make sure. If the dish is something where food is consumed from, either eat food or drink, directly consumed onto plates, cups, so on and so forth, of course that needs a tevilah. But not just that, also anything which prepares food and changes its status from inedible food to edible food, that needs a tevilah. And I'm being specific what I'm saying, from inedible to edible food, you'll see soon why. When a dish transforms food from something inedible to edible, then that, because you prepare the food in it, or not just inedible to edible, even if it is already edible, but you prepare the food in it, then that needs a tevilah, that has to go to the mikveh. And that's the main two times when something has to go to the mikveh. If something, think like spice jars, okay? Spice jars which you you store spices in. Okay, so you buy the glass. I'm not talking about where you've bought it already. We'll talk about that later on, when you buy it as a jar. Let's say you buy jars. And in these jars, you're going to store your spices, something similar to that. Now, you're not going to eat and drink from these jars, right? Are you going to prepare food in these jars? No, you're not. It's just storing the food in it. Something like that does not need tevilah. Does not need tevilah, something like that. If food or drink is not eaten or drunk from it, and there's no development, no preparation of food in it, it does not need tevilah. If it's brought to the table, okay, and it's used together with food, right, then some sense in such a case you do need to do tevilah, because it's part, you can consider that part of the klei seudah, it's part of the dishes of the meal, something like that, is considered part of the meal, therefore you should tovel it.
But
the salt container, exactly. So something like that, because it's brought to the table, therefore you say tovel it without a bracha. Yeah, but many say it doesn't need to be, because meikar adin from the main halakha is only something where food is prepared in or food is eaten from. That's the main. But definitely, let's say salt shakers or where it's only left in the kitchen, right? And it's not brought to the, you know, you always do it in the kitchen. You don't bring it to the table. Sometimes those types of jars, that definitely does not need a tevilah. Even without a bracha, doesn't need a tevilah at all. Because if it's you don't eat from it, you don't prepare food in it, and it's not part of the table accessories, absolutely does not need a tevilah, no question about it. That's always need to be thinking when you're buying something whether it needs to go to mikvah or not. Is it something which you're eating from? Is it something you're going to drink from? Is it something you're going to prepare food in? And if it's none of those, will it be on the table constantly or not? Then take it to the mikvah. But generally speaking, if it doesn't have those three things, then it doesn't need to go to the mikvah. That's the next point I wrote, they're brought to the table. Now, you always go after the primary use, okay? So, a common question, let's say, for example, a pen knife, okay? So a pen knife, you can have the knife there, and you can maybe every cut your oranges with it, or cut your fruit with it, something like that. Does that need tevilah or not? So the answer is, it depends on its primary use. If you bought this pen knife and its purpose is in order for you to be able to cut your fruit, which is highly unlikely, then indeed it would need to be toveled with a bracha. It's a metal, right? But generally speaking, it's not the reason why we have knives and a pen knife. You use it for other things, and then you may want to actually cut something with it. That's fine. It doesn't need tevilah at all, because you go after the pre-hadash explains, you go after the primary use always, and therefore since the primary use is for other things, not for food purposes, therefore it doesn't need tevilah. Even if you buy something which is normally used in the context of food, but you decide to use it for something else, so you bought a knife, a kitchen knife, but you're using it for building works, whatever it may be, then obviously it doesn't need to. Only if it doesn't matter what it's designated for, you can change its designation, there's no problem.
Can opener, you don't need.
Exactly, very good. So that's the next one. So only if it comes into direct contact with food. This is another reason. Even if it's you're using something to prepare food, so to open up tins to eat, etc., something like that, if it doesn't come into direct contact with food, does not need to be. So it's a perfect example, a nutcracker that does not need a tevilah. Let's say a tripod where you're gonna put a pot on, doesn't need tevilah because it doesn't actually to come in direct contact with food. Similarly, let's say a jar to store tea bags, these types of things, even if that was to come on the table, we said before, you know, you're not eating from it, you're not preparing food in it, even if it's brought to the table, but what's in it, even the stuff which is in it, never actually comes into contact with food, because it's always covered. Your tea bags, for example, if you have a jar designated for tea bags, not for just tea granules, then it's coming in contact with food. Then if it's brought to the table, then we can say you take it to the mikvah. But if it's something which doesn't come into any contact with food, then it does not need tevilah at all. So as we said, a bottle opener, and so on and so forth. You know, sometimes in Israel, for example, they have these milk bottles. They have the plastic milk containers, right? And they keep it in one of those plastic bottles. Anyway, those are plastics, so it doesn't need tevilah anyway. But even if it wasn't plastic, something that wouldn't need tevilah, because that's primary use, you've designated it for the milk, and the milk is always found in it, within a container. So it's never coming into direct contact with the food, and therefore it does not need tevilah at all. Finally, so a nutcracker, this is a poskim talk about a nutcracker, because this is a bit different, because a nutcracker, it's opening the nuts, right? And does it come in direct contact with the food? Probably doesn't, because it's just opening the encasement and releases the food for you. But nonetheless, some say that it does need, because at the end of the day, it's actually brought to that, you know, you can't eat without it, it's actually part of your eating. It's so involved. So a can opener, you open the can, then you put it on it's not directly linked to the actual act of eating. You would open the can, and then you'll put it somewhere, and then eat from that plate. Right? A nut opener, you open it and it's ready to eat. Now, as you're eating, you're using the nut opener. Therefore, something. Therefore, the nut opener would be tovel without a beracha. Finally, inedible fruit. If, this is very interesting halakha, if the kli is only used to prepare inedible food, then it does not need tevila. So, for example, the hook of a kenwood, which is only used for dough, something like that, that's preparing food, it's not taking it to edible, therefore that also doesn't need tevila. Generally, a kenwood will need tevila because it's got other, you know, you can make ice cream with it, other things with which the fruit is edible. The hook of the kenwood, which is normally used primarily for dough, or other types of things, or like, things like that, where it's inedible, that does not need tevila. Okay, there were some questions there. Any questions?
Isn't that food preparation?
No, that's right. Only food preparation where it's making it edible or taking some edible and developing it further. If it's preparing food but it's not making it edible, that's not called klei achila. It's not called things you can eat from. So, yeah.
A pickle jar.
Hey?
A pickle jar or olive jar.
An olive jar.
You buy it.
Okay, just 1 second. We'll come to that. Yeah? Okay, fine. Now, number 8. This is the let's move on to this point now. Only if it's manufactured or bought from a non-Jew does it need tevila. So this is an interesting halakha. You should be aware of this, especially those who commonly go to Israel. Both Moshe Feinstein and Chaim Ovadia both came to the same conclusion. You only have to tovel something bought from a non-Jew. Okay? Now, what does bought from a non-Jew mean? What happens if you have a factory owned by a Jew, but the workers within it are non-Jews? Or vice versa, a factory owned by a non-Jew and people working in it are Jewish. What do you say? What do you follow? Do you follow the status of the owner or the people working in it and making the utensils? So, what would you say?
Owner.
So it follows the owner. It follows the owner. Now, when you buy something, how are you meant to know where it's from? So today, so it normally says made in China or made in wherever it is. Yeah.
The wholesaler
so, So normally it says made in, so you can rely on it. If it's a majority of the non-Jews, so it doesn't have to tevila. Doesn't have to have go to mikvah. If, however, made in Israel, if something is made in Israel, where even if the people working may be non-Jews, maybe Arabs, who knows what they are. You know, we can't say for sure there's a majority of people working in the factories who are Jewish. But the majority of factories owned, making these things, are Jewish. And therefore, unless you're buying it from a non-Jewish middleman, then a bracha would not be recited. Wouldn't actually even more, Chaim Ovadia goes even further than that, it doesn't need tevila. It doesn't need tevila. Right? If you're buying something in Israel, it's, you know, the thing is, you need to know, in Israel today, lots of the things are imported, right? So, just because you're buying it in Israel doesn't actually mean it's got any connection to Israel at all. Yeah? But if you know something has been made in Israel, and you're buying it from a Jewish person, then absolutely, it's fine, doesn't need tevila, you can just go home and use it. Even though it may have been made by a non-Jew, but unless it's been owned by a Jew, then it doesn't need tevila at all. That's an interesting point. Only if you buy something from a non-Jew does it need to be toveled. If you borrow something from a non-Jew, it doesn't need to be toveled. And Pesach, written it, people often make the mistake when they sell their chametz, they sell all the whole, everything, they sell all the utensils. That's a problem. That's a problem. Some actually say that you have to go and tovel again, okay? Because if you sold, think about it, if you're selling, this is a real sale. If you're selling your utensils, not just the chametz within them. So then the good forms, if you read them properly, they'll say the chametz within the utensils. Correct, Adrian? It says chametz within the utensils. The chametz within it I'm selling, right? If you need to sell the bliot, you know, for those who are machmir to sell the what's been absorbed. But to actually sell your utensils, that you shouldn't do that. If you did do so, Chaim Ovadia's conclusion is you don't have to tovel it again. Because you can, that wasn't your intention, whatever it may be. And then, conclusion, you don't have to buy one. You should be careful in the first instance that one doesn't sell his utensils on Pesach. Now, this is some. Both two people asked this. You asked about the olive jars, and what did you ask about? Okay, so this is a very interesting chidush of Moshe Feinstein, and it has many applications. So you buy an olive jar, okay? Yeah, melt down the pot. Okay, yeah, good. So it's all the same point. Yeah. So you, if you buy an olive jar, okay? Now you buy an olive jar, you eat all the olives. It's got a nice jar there, and you want to use it for the next. You may want to use it for the next few years. Who knows? I don't go and use it for, but you want to use it now. You bought this from Tesco. It needs tevila, right? You bought it a utensil, a glass utensil. You bought it from a non-Jew, a coffee jar, right? Nescafe coffee jar. You buy the jar, you use it. It's a good jar there. You now want to go and you know, even have these Nutella chocolate spreads, okay? And they actually come with a design on them sometimes, right? Correct? That's all. Yeah, they come with a design on them, and actually people will use them. Do these need to be toveled or not? What would you say? Any ideas? Seemingly it would have to be toveled, right? Because you're buying it from a non-Jew. Any reason why you wouldn't need to?
Because you're storing.
They were designed for one-time use, but then when you decide to keep it for good. Okay, elaborate a bit more. So Moshe Feinstein says as follows. He says that these things are true. These things are normally manufactured for one-time use. Okay? So, when you, disposables don't need tevila. Because Torah only said kelim. It disposes and fall under the rubric of a kli and doesn't need tevila. Because it's been manufactured for one-time use, therefore, when you're buying it from the non-Jew, you buy it as a disposable. Now, the purpose of you having this kli, of this utensil, buying it, the purpose of them giving you this utensil, is for them to contain the olives within it, to contain the coffee within it. That's their purpose of supplying you with this glass. They're not selling you glass. They're not selling you a container. They're selling you coffee. They're selling you tea, whatever it may be. Okay? Once you've now finished the coffee, you've finished the olives, and you decide now, I want to now go and use this on a permanent basis, right? Now, at this stage, it's no longer being transferred from a non-Jew to Jewish ownership. Yeah, you buying it as a disposable. That's the reason you're buying it. That's the reason they're selling it to you. They're selling it to you as a container for your food. Once you finish the food within it, and you want to now use it, you may want to go and use it for another 10 years. That's fine. But its ownership is now not being transferred from a non-Jew to a Jew. It's in your own ownership, its use is now transformed. And that doesn't need tevila. Therefore,
intended to do that, even but when they.
So, yeah, correct. Correct. Because they, this type of utensil, which is, now come back to your question, you asked if you now melt something, if you buy something, you melt something down, and you make it again, it doesn't need tevila, because it's in your own. The question arises with types of foods, where actually part of the price you're paying, yeah, part of the price you're paying is for the glass. So sometimes, some of these chocolate spreads, I don't know, some people have told me, sometimes you can buy like these Nutella chocolate spreads, where actually, half of what they're selling is a nice glass for the kids, right, with the pictures on it. And that is intended to be reused in the future. So then something like that, you're not going to have this svara is not going to be so strong. Then you would better to be tovel it if you wanted to reuse it afterwards. But probably without a barakha, because you can't be exactly sure, right? But that's a general idea. Therefore, when you're buying these types of things, where the primary use of the container is to contain the food, as its name implies, that doesn't need tevila, even if you continue to use it afterwards. Electrical appliances, okay? Electrical appliances. So this gets, people often ask about this now. What do? You bought a new urn, you bought a new blender, toaster. What do you do? How do you kasher it? So just before I go into what have people here done with your stuff at home?
We don't kasher.
We don't have it?
Toaster is electricity.
Okay. Fine. Which rabbi told you that?
was in Israel.
Any, how are people that gone? Adrian?
I've heard different views.
But what do you do? I want to know what people do first. Okay.
Yeah. Not a toaster, but then I've heard other people say no. So I've heard some people say take it apart and.
Okay, so let me go through. I'll go through the order. Okay, the least desirable is not a tovelet at all. Least desirable from a halachic perspective, of course. It's not a tovelet at all. And there is a minority opinion which holds this. So all electrical appliances today, because they can only function through creating a circuit, through plugging it into a wall, plugging it into the ground, it hasn't got a status of a kli. A kli, a utensil, is something which is used in its own right. Because all these types of things cannot be used without being plugged in to the wall, to the ground, they are considered mechubar lakarka, they are attached to the ground, they are a part of the ground, they are part of, and therefore it doesn't need tevila, because it hasn't got its own status, its own identity as a kli. Now we should know, although many propagate this opinion, okay, Chavadiyah and many others weren't happy, Rabbanot Chaliyahu, Rabban Sina Bashar, they all dismissed this, okay, because at the end of the day, although you know, you use the electricity to get it to work, it's its own kli, it's its own utensil, and it's a large stretch to consider it, because it's now plugged into the ground, plugged into the wall, hasn't got a state that it's considered a karka. Yeah, ground is something which doesn't need tevila, of course. Ground cannot become tameh, right? Even if you have 100 dead bodies on the floor, doesn't become. Something attached to the ground can't become impure, right? And therefore, if you build something in the ground itself, it's not going to need tevila, right? If you build a utensil within the ground, it doesn't need tevila. Because you're plugging it in, it's the heart. Therefore, this is difficult to rely on. There will be those who do rely on it, and there's no other option, no other alternative of doing so. But generally, for household items, that's not the desirable thing to do. Rather, you've got three options, okay? And I list them in order of preference. The most preferable, if you want to take the risk, is to actually tovel it, okay? So you take it, you put it in, and you leave it to dry for a day or two. I've done this on numerous occasions, and thank God nothing has ever happened, but people have told me they've done it, and it's broken, okay? So I'm not taking responsibility for it. Yeah, it says never in the water, fine. Okay, but Sayyidina Bashar, no. Sayyidina Bashar is definitely not. No. If you use it within an hour, then yeah, it's Sayyidina Bashar. Okay, but if you leave it to dry for 2 days, 3 days, okay, there's absolutely no sakanat nefashot. The sakanat mamon. Okay, so it depends on the person. Mamon is more nefashot. But generally speaking, there's no sakanat nefashot. Okay, and therefore, that's the best option. If you can do it and you're not too concerned, then you take it. And if it does break down, by the way, then when you go and return it, you have to say that you put it in water. Okay? Yeah? Okay. So that's one. Second one, again, if you're good at these things, then fine, is you dismantle it. When you dismantle it, then you, like the same idea we said before, when you dismantle it and then put it back together again, then actually it's now you've made it a utensil in your own ownership. Just like exactly the same idea you said before. When you melt something down, you recreate it. You're doing it in your own ownership, but therefore it doesn't need tevila, but it's not being transformed from a Jew to a non-Jew. It's within my own ownership, I'm making it a kli. And therefore, there are those who say, if you totally dismantle it and then put it back together again, therefore it's being made a kli in your possession, therefore it doesn't need. Now again, you need to know how to do these things. Not everyone is good at these things. The last option, which is an option, but again isn't so better than nothing, I suppose, is that you give it as an outright gift. You buy your urn, you buy whatever it is, as an outright, you buy it and you give it as an outright gift to your non-Jewish neighbor. So it doesn't belong to you.
Then borrow it.
And then you ask him or her to lend it back to you, and they're lending it back to you indefinitely. Right?
Can you make it hefker?
How's it hefker in your own reshut? But if you're using it every day, how can we have that? So I just want to summarize that. Just summarize before we. So you've got four options. Option, one option is, but as I said, this is not There are others who allow it. If you can't do any of the other three, it's definitely better. One option is don't do anything, because anything needs to be plugged in isn't considered clean, doesn't need tevilah. As I said, the halakha doesn't really follow that. Therefore, one's got three options. Tovel it and wait a few days before using it. Number two is dismantle it and then re-erect it, and then you can use it. Or finally, if those two aren't good, then you give it to someone as an outright gift, and they lend it back to you, and therefore you're using it, you're borrowing it from him all the time. And remember, like we said before, you do not need to tovel something if you're only borrowing it from a non-Jew. These are the options that you have.
So what do I do with my toaster, which I've never talked
about? So, one more point. Toaster is a bit better. That's why I put it there. Toaster is a bit better. That's less of a problem. To the extent that Hamad Vadia says that whenever you toast, if you tovel the toaster, you toast without a bracha. The reason being is, there's a svara from Moshe Feinstein, that difficult is that since the toaster, just all it does is just warms up the food. It doesn't actually prepare. It's just warming something which is already there. It's not considered actually preparing food. It's just warming it. Therefore, that doesn't need. He writes, Moshe doesn't need a toaster specifically. Moshe held electrical appliances do need tevilah, but toasters don't. And therefore, a toaster is fine. You probably were instructed well that a toaster doesn't need to. Okay, toaster is what to rely on, not to. But other things, those should really, if possible, be taken.
An oven. You like buying an oven, whatever, and it's got an oven in there.
Yeah.
You have to take it out.
How do you tovel the oven, you mean?
Yeah.
It's too heavy. It's like being attached to a gun, no? You can't lift it.
That's really, yeah. We're talking about things which are transported, you know, things which are moved, like an urn, like a toaster, like a blender, any type of things. Something which is in part of furniture, that is, you have to say that is really much more part of, that you consider much more part of the ground, as it were, doesn't need to read up. But actually, I want to think about that, actually, because I don't think why that's not a.
You can say the same thing about microwave.
The microwave is interesting, because the microwave doesn't really touch the food, because you always put it encased in, therefore some say they don't need it. The microwave doesn't need to read up. Even the glass dish within it. Even the glass dish within the microwave doesn't need to read up, by the way. But I want to. It doesn't need to read up, the question is why. I want to think about that a bit more, okay?
We're just taking the fuse out, or taking the power on to get it back on. I've heard some people do. Is that in between the bottom level and the one up?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, that's a good way. Better than nothing, but correct. The question is, to what extent do we consider it as you're making a new kli? Is by putting the fuse back in, you made a new kli, you just fixed it? Because fixing something isn't considered making it, right? Fixing something, it's a kli, and it's a utensil, and you're not fixing it. So that's the question, to what extent, right? The poskim we talk about dismantling it and then putting it together. But I can understand what you're saying. It's definitely better than nothing. It definitely is an alternative. Finally, let's just quickly finish off. Eating, this can be a common problem. Eating by someone who's not religious. So somebody invites you to the house, okay? So let's leave aside the kashrut issues. How can you eat in someone's house who doesn't keep kashrut? But you can, very simply, if they're offering you cold fruit. If they give you fruit or vegetables to eat, or something cold, or something, and you're eating it with cutlery, they're serving you very nicely, with nice plates, nice silverware, and there's no problem eating for them, if it's all clean, and they're offering you cold fruit, even if you know for a fact they're eating non-kosher food, no problem eating in their house. From the perspective...
Meat not kosher, then you gave them food in it, then they put what you
have. If it's totally clean, there's no problem.
And what about going, if you invited to go house?
If it's totally clean, there's no problem. What can be the problem?
No problem.
If it's totally clean. The dish and the silver have to be totally clean. Remember...
It's for meat then.
Yes, but you're having something cold now. You're having some fruit and vegetables, and not fatty. Okay, something which isn't hot and isn't no problem, right? Because there's no transfer of heat, right? So the problem though is If it's an irreligious Jew, it's more problematic than a non-Jew. Because a non-Jew doesn't have to mess his utensils. But a Jew does. And you can't use utensils before they've been toveled. So what do you do now? This person offered you, he's gone out of his or her way to ensure that he's bought the food with the best hechsher, whatever it may be, and has gone to great lengths to ensure that you'll be able to eat. And then you realize as you sit down that you're fine, everything's fine, there's no kashrut problems in the sense of the food being kosher or not, right? There's no problem with but these are utensils which are haven't been toveled. So, well, some people will be offended by that, though. That's correct. If you can do that, definitely the best. But some people may be offended. They say, they may not be able to accept that, may be able to understand that. The main halakha is that one should try not to get himself into such a situation, because it is a problem eating on those dishes, even if it's cold fruit and there are no kashrut issues. There's tevilat kelim issue. However, if one finds himself in such a situation, and it will be offensive to the host to do so, then one can rely on their opinions that say it's fine for a number of combinations, but the main reason being is that you're not actually borrowing it. When you borrow from a Jew, then it has to be toveled. But here, someone will view it when you're eating at his house, then actually, you're not borrowing from the person. What you're doing is he's giving you the right to use. The right to use is not the same as leasing it to you. Okay? And the right to use doesn't mandate that, I'm giving you the right to use it. I'm not giving you the right to go and tovel it now. Right? I'm just giving you a right to use it for the next half an hour to eat. If I lend you something, then I have permission to do whatever I want with it. I can borrow it. It's mine now for the duration you give it to me. Therefore, I have to tovel it. And therefore, most poskim see when I'm inviting you to my house, I'm giving you my dishes, I'm lending them to you. And therefore, you would need tevilah. But if one finds himself in a situation where it's uncomfortable to say that he can't eat from it, and what he can do is, he can rely on the opinions which say one can eat in such a house, simply because it's not considered that he's borrowing it, and it's rather he's just using it for the time being, and therefore it's fine.
If you're in a hotel, and you're sitting down for a breakfast, non-kosher breakfast, so you're using their plates and cutlery, you might have some fruit. Are you able to do that?
Yeah.
Use the normal cutlery, normal plate, also a hotel which is clean.
Yes. Definitely. The reason why I wouldn't advise this on a practical level, unless the person knows what he's doing, is because there are sometimes vegetables, which are considered sharp ones, which can extract non-kosher absorptions, even if it's cold. Okay? So something like a lemon, on vegetables, you've got anything strong, even radishes is a problem, which is why, but some talking about something very, very plain, like a tomato, like a cucumber, or like simple fruit, something like that.
Bread and butter.
No. Butter you can't.
If you're in a place, absolutely not.
You can't use butter. No.
Butter is pure kosher. There's only one way to make butter. It's from...
A cow.
You can't make butter
Let me explain. Putting butter on non-kosher utensils, anything fatty that you can't... that you can't. Okay? Yeah, you could put it on the bread on the non-kosher plate that you could do because the bread is fine, yeah. If the plate is clean and it's cold, it's fine to put bread on it. It's fine to put simple vegetables on it. Because remember, you can only absorb, you only transfer through heat, through fat, or through something sharp. That's it.
What about tea and coffee?
I don't want to go into this. This is a whole different topic. But I just want to finish this quickly before the end because we've gone over time. So that's the conclusion of number 10, eating by someone not religious. Converts. This is very interesting, this. Okay? This question was posed to me a few months ago. And I looked into it. What happens to a convert? So a convert who has been keeping kosher for the last year or two or 3 years, okay? But they're technically not Jewish, right? So now when they go to mikveh, they become Jewish now. Do they have to do tevilat kelim or not? What do you think? Because now...
he has to tovel his kelim.
Why is it a tovel his kelim? Because it's being changed from a non-Jew to a Jew. So the pasuk, when the pasuk talked about tevilat kelim, what happened... it wasn't the people who were changing their identity. It was the utensils which were going from a
non-Jewish identity to Jewish identity. Who says Chacham Avadia, to extend that to the utensil staying in the same possession and being changed from a non-Jewish identity, the owner, to Jewish owner? True, there is a change, and that's going from a non-Jew to a Jew, because the utensils are being changed from a non-Jew to a Jew. They used to belong to a non-Jew, now they belong to a Jew. But the utensils themselves aren't being changed, the owner, the human being involved is changing. And therefore that's not included, that doesn't need to be tovah. There is even an opinion which wants to say that when the ger goes to the mikvah, together with him going to the mikvah, the utensil as well, also this is one of the Avni Nezer, the Sofer Rebbe, he held this as well. When he goes to the mikvah, it's because of the same idea like we began with. The idea is he's transforming his identity, he's being elevated spiritually, and that can extend to all his possessions as well. And therefore, him going to the mikvah. And therefore, the halakha is that a ger and a gioret who go to the mikvah, they don't have to tovel their utensils after they convert. If they do want to, then if they want to be machmir, then they should do so without a beracha, without a blessing. No, you have to tovel it. Definitely. Of course. If you didn't have to, then the question we discussed before wouldn't be relevant if you're eating at someone's house. It's non-religious. Yeah, it doesn't matter. If it once belonged to an non-Jew and transferred to a Jew, now it needs to be. You know. Now you can't know. If you don't know, you don't know. What can you do? You know, you're buying from, but if you're buying from someone who you assume never did it, then it needs to be tovel. Okay, so I think that's enough. We won't finish it, but that's the main point I want to discuss. So we saw the source, we discussed the reasons for this mitzvah, and we went through different categories of utensils, different types of food preparations which need the tevilah, and these interesting points we discussed about disposables, about electrical appliances, about eating by people who may not share the same mitzvot as we do, and so on and so forth. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, there are 3 more shiurim in the series. Next week, please God, we will talk about Bishul Akum, cookings, and baking by a non-Jew. We'll try to discuss also the bread which you can buy today, what exact ingredients when it comes to buying things without hechsherim, if they've been cooked or not. Then we have, after that, another shiur, and then another shiur. So next week is Hashem Achim. The Hananiah, the Hashem Ev, Tzak, Adok, Baruch, Hashem Achim, 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 Hashem Achim